Welcome to this week's Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Emma Adjumang, Personal Finance Writer at Investors Chronicle, and Toby Gibb, European Investment Director at Fidelity. European equities have had a tough time over the past few years for reasons including debt problems and economic concerns. But so far this year, European equity markets have been one of the surprise top performers, with the Euro Stoxx 50 index rising around 20% over the last 12 months. Emma, you've been looking at this. What's been driving continental European markets?
There are quite a few reasons behind it, Leonora. First of all, the economy in the Eurozone has really started to pick up some speed. Unemployment has fallen to the lowest level since 2009, and growth has improved. And secondly, companies have been benefiting from the improved conditions, with earnings growth really picking up. Another reason maybe investors are returning to Europe is because the political worries that we had at the start of the year, for example, people worried about Marine Le Pen winning the French election, failed to materialise. And that's another reason why investors have come back into Europe.
Okay, I mean, that sounds all very promising. But in view of this year's good run and a good outlook for earnings, are European equities still on reasonable valuations?
They're not as cheap as they were this time last year or even earlier this year. But I suppose compared to other developed markets, particularly the US, they are still significantly cheaper. For example, Europe is trading on a cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio of 18.8 times, and that's compared to 30.7 times for the US.
Okay, another important question. They've had a good run. Can they continue to do well?
Well, the improving economic picture does suggest that they could. And I mean, with the European Central Bank's policies keeping low interest rates and quantitative easing, you know, helping financial markets and growth, that's also supportive. And another thing is that many of the companies on European stock exchanges are cyclical, which means that if the global economy keeps growing, these companies are likely to do well.
Okay, so in that case, which sectors within Europe look like they could do well?
Well, it's those cyclical companies that I was just talking about. They might include things like car manufacturers, financial services companies, and oil and gas producers, all of which are well represented on the European stock market.
Now, you spoke to quite a few investment professionals about the prospects for Europe. I mean, are they unanimously agreed that the prospects for Europe are good?
No, perhaps no surprises there. They weren't all universally favourable. I mean, some of the risks that could materialise are the fact that European markets are doing so well could lead to further strengthening of the euro, and that could hurt the competitiveness of European companies who are exporting their goods and services around the world. I mean, some of the other analysts we spoke to, notably at Rathbone, said that the most recent credit and monetary indicators they'd seen suggested that growth might actually be slowing down. And if that happens, we might not get the growth in earnings that we're expecting. And the final thing I'll speak about is the European Central Bank, which is really going to have to walk a tightrope to get the balance right. And if they don't, there could be a lot of market volatility.
OK, I mean, two sides to a story as always. But if you're one of the investors who thinks these risks are worth taking, what funds could you use to capture Europe's recovery?
One example is Jupiter European, which we count among the IC Top 100 funds. It's managed by Alex Darwell, and it's one of the best performing funds in the sector. Over 5 years, it's delivered 129.6%, and it has a decent ongoing charge of around 1%.
Now, your article also mentioned that smaller companies look set to do particularly well in Europe. Why?
Well, when economic conditions are good, history suggests that smaller companies tend to outperform. So, you know, if you're really bullish about Europe, this could be an opportunity to look at smaller companies fund.
OK, and what would be a good smaller companies fund?
JP Morgan European Smaller Companies Trust, which is trading on a 7% discount and has had a really, you know, excellent performance. Over 5 years, it's returned 219% and it has an ongoing charge of 1.13%.
OK, so some strong growth prospects, but are there any Europe funds that would suit income investors?
There definitely are. One example is BlackRock Continental Europe Income Fund. It has a yield of 3.63% and it's also returned really good results. Over 5 years, it made 124.8%.
OK, now Toby, what's your view on continental European equities? Do you think they've got further to run?
Yeah, I think I would echo a lot of what's already been said. I think the macroeconomic picture in Europe is pretty positive. Your GDP growth is robust, not just in the core of Europe, but also in the periphery. And we're also seeing, rapidly accelerating lead indicators across the Eurozone. This, as has been said, has fed through to the corporate level. We've seen strong returns. We've seen strong earnings from European companies, and they're starting to catch up with their peers on the other side of the Atlantic. Although I think, I think we do need to remember that we're no longer early in the cycle in Europe. And margins certainly in some sectors are getting up towards peak levels. The economic acceleration that we've seen in Europe and more globally has led to, I would say, a strong willingness on the part of investors to take on more risk. So investors are increasingly paying up for risk, whether it be in the equity market, whether it be in credit markets. And you could, this sort of manifests itself where when you look at the fact that Italian double B high yield corporates can effectively borrow now cheaper than the U.S. government. So I think that sort of shows you the level of risk taking that exists in the market right now. And that's also come through, I think, in some very strong performance and very strong re-rating of some cyclical companies in Europe. So I think there are some areas of the market which are potentially looking a little bit toppy, and I think what that means is, selectivity is very key. A focus on stock picking is very important in this environment.
Okay, now you said certain areas of the market are toppy. So what's not unreasonable valuations, and what areas are unreasonable valuations?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, looking at the European market as a whole, I think it's difficult to argue that it's cheap. There's very little in the sort of the investment world that is cheap right now. But I think you can make a pretty reasonable case that European equities are attractively valued relative to other developed markets, particularly the US. So the discount that the European market is trading at relative to the US is wider than normal. And while US companies are trading, well above their long-term average and on some metrics at all-time highs, other than, in sort of the tech bubble period, Europe is trading, only marginally above its long-term history if you look at a long-term cyclically adjusted price earnings multiple. So Europe is reasonable valuation in absolute terms and attractive relative to the US. And I think, attractive relative to other asset classes, particularly relative to fixed income. I mentioned the point about the yields on European high yield companies, for example. But also when you look at the percentage of European companies whose dividend yield is higher than their corporate bond yield, that's pretty much as high as it's ever been. So I think relative to other asset classes, there's definitely a valuation case to be made. I think from within the European market, I think there are some pockets of really interesting opportunity. So technology is one, particularly software, where there are some very high quality businesses with good stable cash flows. Strong growth opportunities, companies like SAP, like Amadeus IT, for example, where valuations are not dissimilar to some of the consumer staples companies, but the growth outlook is much more positive. And similarly in healthcare, where there are companies which have really been sold off along with the rest of the healthcare sector following the sort of the political issues in the US and pressure on drug pricing, Yet companies that don't actually really don't sell drugs in the US. So companies like Fresenius Medical Care, for example, which is a buyer of drugs rather than a seller of drugs in the US, but has been sold off along with the rest of the sector.
Okay. Now, Emma pointed out that not everybody thinks Europe is a good place to be at the moment. What are your main concerns about Europe, and what do you think are the main risks to investing in European equities?
Yeah, I think one of the risks is probably the level of positive sentiment and the level of complacency that I think has got into the market. So when you look at fund manager surveys, people are very positively positioned. Cash levels are very low, both from institutional investors but also from retail investors. And when you ask institutional investors what they think would be most surprising, they see a crash as being the most surprising thing. They see a bubble as being the least surprising thing to occur. So I think there is a degree of complacency in the market, which clearly is a risk. But I think what's interesting for Europe right now is a lot of the risks are external to Europe rather than internal to Europe. So, we've gone through a period and Emma talked about the political risks and all the uncertainty there, and that was a big reason, I think, why investors really shied away from European equities and we saw such massive outflows from the asset class in 2016. But now a lot of that is behind us. A lot of these elections have gone in broadly a market-friendly way. Clearly we do still have risks in the form of Italian election and Brexit negotiations, etc. But, a number of the big risk events are behind us. And now I think the risks are more external to Europe. So whether that's geopolitical risk, but I think more pressing sort of the US and sort of what the fact that the US is quite late cycle and that could have a negative impact, but also China, where we have seen a rapid acceleration in credit growth, and Europe is a very global market. Sort of 50% or thereabouts of revenues come from outside of Europe, compared to sort of 20-30% for the US market. Those risks I think are quite real for the European market, particularly for exporting companies.
Okay, now on that subject of risk and facing in or facing out, Emma also mentioned that European smaller companies look set to do well, but typically these are higher risk than large caps and typically, I suppose, they're more domestic facing. So would you say that the smaller companies listed in continental Europe at the moment are worth the extra risk?
I think so, yes. I think, with this question, I think it sort of depends how you're thinking about risk. If you're thinking in terms of share price volatility, then yes, typically small cap stocks tend to be more volatile, more risky than large cap stocks. But given the point about a lot of the risks for Europe being outside of Europe currently rather than inside of Europe, actually there's I think a case to be made for investing in more domestic companies being a less risky prospect than investing in more globally focused companies that are exposed to emerging markets, are exposed to a late cycle US and are more exposed to the point that Emma made about the potential for the currency to strengthen further, although it has been pretty strong so far this year. I think the other thing is that the small cap universe is vast, and so there are always opportunities to be found on a company specific level, companies that have particular exposures, particular valuations. So it's a very broad canvas from an opportunity perspective.
Okay, thank you, Toby. Some really helpful points. And you can see Emma's full list of fund suggestions for investing in Europe in this week's magazine and the website. Now, there's a great deal of uncertainty over the direction of financial markets. But this doesn't seem to have stopped UK investors putting their money to work, with a record-breaking amount channeled into UK funds in September. Emma, how much did UK investors put into funds? And was it just in September that they had an appetite for investing?
UK investors put in £5.6 billion into funds in September, which, as you say, is a record-breaking amount. But actually, this was part of a trend, as in the first 9 months of the year, UK investors invested a whopping £33 billion. And that has already made 2017, with 3 months of the year left to go, at least in the Investment Association statistics, the best year on record.
OK, well, that sounds like a phenomenal amount of money. What sort of funds have investors been putting it into?
Interestingly, investors are really keen on fixed income. So fixed income was the best-selling fund asset class in September, with net retail sales of £1.8 billion. And sterling strategic bond funds were the best-selling fund sector in September, with net retail sales of about £1 billion.
Is this actually a good idea with UK interest rates on the rise and possibly US ones too?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I mean, I suppose the case for it would be that if investors are going for sterling strategic bond funds, they are actually better at being able to go where the opportunities are because of their flexible mandate. And they can use things like derivatives to be able to, you know, make money whether markets are falling or rising. And so they can potentially better avoid the risks of interest rates rising and find opportunities.
Okay. Now, investors weren't keen on all types of funds. What didn't they like?
The UK in general was very out of favour. UK equity funds saw net retail outflows of about £100 million. And the UK all company sector was the worst selling sector in September.
Okay. So why is it that UK investors are avoiding UK funds?
I mean, the obvious thing is the economic uncertainty surrounding the Brexit negotiations. And there are also worries about consumers' abilities to keep spending in the face of high inflation and poor wage growth.
Okay. So would you say they're right? I mean, these investors, should we also be giving UK equity funds a wide berth?
I mean, in some sense, you can understand why some investors are shunning the UK, but there is also an argument that there could be a value opportunity developing in the UK. And Steve Davies, he's manager of the Jupiter UK Growth Fund, says he finds the situation very similar to how out of favour emerging markets were a few years ago. And we all know how well they've risen strongly since then. So there really is a case for considering whether or not you still want some exposure to the UK, especially as there's so many good fund managers around.
Okay. Now, Toby, what do you think? Do you think UK equities are still a worthwhile area to invest in, even with the many uncertainties relating to Brexit?
I think so, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, the sort of the cloud of Brexit looms very large over the asset class. And I think, you know, a degree of certainty on the negotiations would certainly help. You know, as we know, stock markets don't like uncertainty, and you know, but in spite of that, you know, since the election, the UK market has actually performed pretty well. I think, you know, some clarity on what was happening in the negotiations, I think, would be a positive from an economic perspective. I think it would give UK firms and international firms some more sort of confidence and clarity in terms of the operational decisions and investment decisions in the UK, you know, from an investment perspective, from a hiring perspective. But I think, you know, given everything that's going on and what we're sort of reading and seeing on the TV, this is probably wishful thinking, and I think markets are probably going to have to contend with a good degree of uncertainty around the negotiations, you know, for the next while. But you know, that said, from an investment perspective, when you have volatility, when you have uncertainty, this does create opportunity. So you know, when you get macroeconomically driven uncertainty, this throws up valuation anomalies, and I think if you take a disciplined bottom up approach, I think you can take advantage of these sorts of opportunities.
Okay, now turning to the opportunities, do you think that internationally exposed large caps are a better option than more domestic facing small and mid caps?
I think it really depends from company to company and from sector to sector. I think one of the big benefits that the UK has and the reason why Brexit is a lot easier from a corporate perspective than Frexit might be is because we do have a floating exchange rate and you've seen that the sterling has been the release valve and has helped particularly the global companies that are listed in the UK to perform pretty well. But I think I think you do have to be very selective. I think there are some even within the more global facing companies in the UK, I think there are some areas which have got quite expensive, particularly some of the the staples companies, and I think growth prospects are for some of these companies are relatively limited. I think the focus that a lot of these companies have had on zero-based budgeting, which is an agenda pushed by some of the private equity companies in the US, has meant that growth prospects have deteriorated because they haven't been investing in R&D for some time. So I think there's reason to be cautious on some of those companies. But then on the other side, areas like tobacco, British American Tobacco, for example, has some very interesting and exciting new products in the next generation products, so vaping and heat not burn type products. So there are opportunities there. And again, back to healthcare, I think that's an area where there has been investment. There are interesting new drug pipelines, and valuations are pretty attractive. And then, turning to small cap, yes, in aggregate, small and mid cap companies are more exposed to the domestic economy. But, some of those companies have been very aggressively sold off because of the uncertainty around Brexit. So again, that does create some opportunity.
Okay. Now, a particular sort of positive that you associate with the UK equity market is that quite a lot of companies here pay attractive dividend streams. But at the moment, what are their valuations like and are they worth paying for?
Yeah, it's a really good question, a really interesting question. I think, there are some areas of the, I guess, the kind of the low volatility, stable cash flow type companies, and thinking again of staples, where valuations have become very very expensive, and I think the opportunities are relatively limited. So I think it's in areas, and I think energy is a very good example of a sector where dividend yields are very high. And I think investors have been very wary of the sector and concerned that companies would not be able to pay their dividends. So if you take a company like Royal Dutch Shell, which has a dividend yield well in excess of 6%, but actually now is generating more cash than it was generating when the oil price was over $100 a couple of years ago. So, this is a company that has very aggressively cut costs. It has synergy benefits from the deal with BG, as a result, generating a very large amount of cash and is able to more than cover its dividend. So, I think that's key, is identifying companies where the valuation is attractive and the cash flow is there and able to pay the dividend. And I think there are some good examples of that, but there are also some areas where valuations are quite excessive and the dividends are more at risk.
Okay, thank you, Toby. And you can see which other types of funds have been popular in this week's funds news and on the website. That brings us to the end of today's show, so it just remains to thank Emma Adjumang, personal finance writer at Investors Chronicle, and Toby Gibb, European Investment Director at Fidelity. But you can read more on investing in Europe, the merits of strategic bond funds, and the prospects for UK equities in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle and the website. Thank you for listening and have a good weekend.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.